I could kill you right now. I could. I will. And then, who would believe I did it because I didn't like you? No one. They'd believe you tried to hurt me. Definitely believe that. Come at me.
This is the Extra Hot Great Podcast, episode 64 for the week of March 30th, 2015. I am a guy named George with a W in the bush, David T. Cole, and I'm here with Steely Swordswoman Tara Ariano.
This just feels right.
Alexander Stace's own founder, Jeff Alexander.
I have an open door policy.
And arm chopped off for nothing, Omar Gallagher.
Hey, I need that arm for, you know what? Never mind, just take it.
Welcome, everybody. Today, because we are recording this the day after The Walking Dead season finale, we wanted to have on the person who's mainly covered it this season, Omar Gallagher. Hello, Omar. And because Sarah is not with us this week, we decided to also invite the person who covered one episode of the season, Jeff Alexander. Hello, Jeff.
Hello.
We also wanted to mention that the phrase that doesn't pay from last week still has not been guessed, so it is once again in play. Now, let's get down to it. The Walking Dead! How about that 90-minute finale, Omar?
So very tired.
Omar took the day off work to recover from his post and to prepare for this, so thank you. It's very, very dedicated of you.
Oh, Lord. Yeah, it was great, though. I really enjoyed it. I thought they sometimes kind of don't get the finales right. They get the premieres really, really well, mm-hmm. and sometimes the finales don't pay off, but I thought this one was really, really solid.
What were some of the finales that have not satisfied you in the past?
Oh, the one where the governor attacks the jail and sure. kills Herschel in front of everybody, and that one just felt way over the top and muddled, and they try to juggle so many storylines sometimes that they end up sort of shortchanging some and overdoing others. This one felt really balanced. It felt like everything sort of came together. It made you want to watch next season to see what happens with those wolf guys. I mean, it really sets up a lot of interesting possibilities for next season, I thought.
I like this episode because, like, it was big, but it was the human drama was big, not necessarily, you know, the zombie attacks and all that sort of stuff. Like, they had the zombie disco at one point, which is the trap in the food, you know, shipping yard, the food packing shipping yard. That was fun. But I really like this episode was about everybody adjusting to, you know, the townspeople adjusting to the reality of the world. And then like our gang adjusting to like, how do we, you know, deal with normalcy again, and everybody's kind of fucking it up. And it was interesting to see it all play out, and it didn't quite play out like I thought it was going to, which was nice too, when it doesn't telegraph everything that's going to happen and you're surprised by a finale.
Jeff, what did you think?
I think it's fallen into a sort of pattern where every other finale, like the even numbered seasons, Rick is kind of you know, falls into darkness.
Yeah.
Odd-numbered season, he sort of rediscovers his humanity. And I think there was a lot of that theme going through the episode, like with Glenn and Nicholas, with Sasha and Gabriel. And you may have noticed that the zombie disco song was a Brian Wilson tune called Love and Mercy, which I'm sure is relevant, a remix of that song.
I did not notice that. I don't think I know that.
There
song.
You go.
Very well observed. I liked it, but I would have liked it more if Gabriel was murdered for his
at any point.
And I guess that's not the point I was probably supposed to draw from this episode, but what the fuck? Even when you're sad, close the gate.
Him and Sasha can go together. I'm pretty sick of both of them.
Yeah.
Yeah, their sad sackiness is really super sad sackiness. It's like almost it's almost a caricature of itself, really, at this point. Like, they're so over the top that you don't really want to see them resolve their issues. You just want to see them, you know, fly off to their home planet time. Like, they're really hitting Poochie levels with their issues.
Here's my main problem with Gabriel in this episode, other than the gate, is when you want, if you're in the apocalypse and you want to kill yourself, I'm on the record saying I think that's the smart choice. Kill yourself. Don't make it the zombie's job. Zombies got things to do. That's not its responsibility.
My thing with Sasha is like, I think like, okay, well, how many is she going to take out with her? Like, she's going to be responsible for some sort of fuck up that's going to kill a bunch of people. You know, that seems to be where she's headed.
Right.
I could do without maybe about four or five characters that have sort of outlived their usefulness.
Who Tara. Else?
Yeah. They need to set up the Alexandra sad zone.
The mope area. Yeah. Hmm. Yeah.
Or send them to the disco place.
Yeah. Yeah, get a little tune up. I mean, if you're dancing around with zombies and they're secure, like the idea of the zombie disco, if I may, is that you put a couple of these trucks together and then, you have your disco ball, you have your loud music and you have your zombies, but they're all on those hooks still. So they're all flailing around. So it looks like they're dancing and you just have to like dance in the middle of the room and you have a good time and you're there with all the zombies and you feel renewed and you go back to the safe zone and you get on with your life.
Oh, you're saying this is recreation for living humans.
Yeah. It's like a rehabilitation. You get to like party with the zombies. You're still safe. You're getting, you know, like an experience you don't get in the world now because generally there's no power, there's no community. So you kind of have like a little outing. It's sort of like when you're in school and like the big class trip would be go to the local roller rink. It's basically that for the survivors.
It's a pinata
party. Dancing Dead.
Yeah.
You're really showing age with that roller rink remark, Dave.
And who, I know, shout out to Wheelies in St. Catharines, Ontario.
Couple skate.
Yeah, they used to be called Snowball. Were in and that you'd have like the seed couple start skating by themselves, and then the DJ would be and now Snowball, and they would split, and the guy would take one girl waiting on the side, and the girl would take one guy.
Oh my God.
Would keep on going like that, and sort of a exponential pattern till everybody was picked. But it wasn't really everybody.
You're not seeing Dave's air quotes.
Yeah.
Right now. Anyway, sidebar.
Are you sure that was skating and not like an orgy or something?
Who else would be on your list of
something different?
who else would you put? I heard you say Tara, but who else would you put on your list of characters that can go? Because mine would include Eugene.
Yeah, I like Eugene a lot just because he brings that weird nerd flavor to the and says the weird. He has the most random weird dialogue of any of the characters, and I kind of dig that about him. Yeah. But the rumor mill was that either Glenn or Daryl was going to die. That, and I think the smartest thing the show did in the finale was not kill off one of the main characters. I think that's what everybody expected. That's sort of the groove that they've gotten into every season finale. And I thought by kind of thwarting that expectation, that I thought that was really smart not to kill one of them. And kind of move it forward. So,
let's have a discussion about the show versus the comics in a bit, and we can silo all that stuff. But it was refreshing not to have the finale be the shock death, finale, and that was nice.
Well, there was a shock death. It was shocking for our returned friend.
Sure. Right. Yeah. Do you want to skip to the end and work our way back?
Sure.
All right. Well, the episode's book ended by Morgan, the return of Morgan from the very first episodes. And in the meantime, he's sort of become this Zen Buddhist monk, which is kind of neat. He's got a cool stick. He hits people with it. He cleans it off after. Very conscientious. And then at the end of the episode, after Daryl and
Aaron
are rescued by him, they bring him back to the safe zone, and just in time to see Rick blow away the abusive husband. And he's like, hi.
Hey, Morgan. What's going on?
How you been?
He's got a nice coat. I really like that coat he was wearing.
Yes. Well, yeah, he's like training Splinter or something. But Morgan, they've sort of teased that all season, and it's nice to finally have him on board. I think we all expected that to happen, like, the beginning of the season when they teased it at the end of last season. So it took a whole season just to really get him in there in the action.
Yeah, and it'll be interesting, next season, because in this season, there's this whole thing, and it took like four episodes to really get it out of their system in a way. But like all the survivors were like, oh, we can't stay here, we'll go soft, which I found like really that particular argument I found really annoying, because here is finally something they've been seeking for such a long time. It's a safe haven. It's a place where they can you know, build something rather than always be running. And the first thing in their heads that everybody seems to be universal, we can't stay here or we'll go soft and we'll die. And so the solution seemed to be, you know, leave again. I didn't really buy that argument, but what I finally, they settled that sort of morphed into, okay, let's not leave, but let's make everybody else like us. Let's train these townspeople to become, you know, the hardened, warriors that we are. So that was a little bit better, but it took a while to get there. And that space where they're all like, we can't stay here. We'll be all cream puffs. I hated that part of
well, they the took season. It took that detour into, well, we'll just take it by force, which seemed really like, whoa, hey.
That was geez. A little dark.
Yeah, and it seemed a little out of character too. Like they seemed to, you know, go into, you know, literally to the dark side, you know, if this was Star Wars, really quick. And I thought that was a little, you know, zero to evil in 60 seconds kind of thing, you know?
And it seemed weird that Rick has the most to lose. I mean, he's the one with the baby and with the teenage son and the leader of the group. And he's the one first out of the gate to fuck everything up.
What were you going to say, Jeff?
I think he sort of was becoming a kind of a Shane-like character almost, you know, very, you know, this is about me and what I need and what my group needs, as opposed to the kind of earlier seasons version of Rick. He's sort of become the way Shane used to be, I think.
Yeah, that's a good observation. And, you know, do you think there's like an issue when you have a character that you're probably not going to kill off anytime soon? And really, like, it's sort of like the post-apocalyptic equivalent of having a couple, will they, won't they, like on Friends, and they kind of like, they break up. But instead of being in a relationship and not being in a relationship, it's settling versus, you know, the warrior mentality. It's, you know, being a father versus being a fighter. And it seems like Rick just vacillates between those two things season by season, episode by episode sometimes. And it can get wearing, I think.
Well, they've used Michonne to contrast that, I think, and done a much better job, I think, with Michonne's conflict than with Rick's. Rick's is way all over the place, and Michonne's seems way more subtle.
Again, Jeff, you were saying?
Sorry,
that's
Jeff.
Okay.
No, that's all right. No, I agree with what Omar was saying. It's, you know, it's like I was saying earlier, it kind of does go back and forth from season to season. He kind of gets to the edge and then pulls it back. So that's kind of how his oscillation happens as far as I can see.
Yeah. Do you want to get a little bit into the comic stuff just to compare and contrast?
I'll just lean back in my chair.
Walking Dead comic spoilers, a ho fun ahoy. I am really interested in the next season because this is the start in the comic version of this sort of area conglomerate of little tiny city states. And Alexandria is one of them. There's another one called Hilltop. And there's another one, most interestingly, called The Kingdom. Mm-hmm. And The Kingdom is run by King Ezekiel, who has a pet tiger named Shiva or something like that, who he got from the local zoo somewhere. And there's this whole...
As you do.
What's that?
As you do.
Oh, as you do. Yeah.
Are you sure you're talking about The Walking Dead and not Jodorowsky's Dune? That's what it sounds like so far.
Well, it kind of sounds like a bit like that or a bit like Warriors a bit, you know, where everybody's got their little thing. And this one guy is sort of like he's got this tribal zoo kingdom vibe motif going over here. It's the weirdest The Walking Dead comics get and probably the most comic-y it gets. I'm not quite sure if they're going to do it because it doesn't quite feel like it fits into the more realistic version, you know, like of the TV show. Not that the comic is fanciful, but to me, the TV show is a little more grounded than the comic is. What do you guys
Kirkman,
think?
Kirkman has made that joke that like he put the tiger in like, oh, fuck you, TV guys. See if you can do this. Like he's actually did that on purpose. Or at least he's joked that he did.
As much as I think it might not fit, I would love to see them try.
Oh yeah.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Do you read the comics, Jeff?
I'm about a year and a half behind.
Oh, okay.
On the comics.
And
so, don't mind me.
And do you think next year? So I believe it's in this storyline that the loose affiliation of these states comes up against another big baddie. And it's that other big baddie that ends up killing Glenn.
Yeah, and I'm right. wondering if that if that's who these wolf guys are, or that's who their leader is.
Right.
If it's a Negan character.
Yeah, right. So do you think they will kill off Glenn? Because they sort of did this thing in Terminus where they ape that whole scene when he's almost getting his head caved in with a bat.
Oh, I like, so expect it then.
Yeah, because that's the same scene. It's the same type of thing that happens to him in the comics in you know next season. Do you think they'll do it?
The show is paced so differently from the comics. I don't know if it's going to happen this season or I mean, next season, but maybe the season after. So and plus, you know, the other variable is, of course, the spinoff. So who knows how many resources that's going to siphon off of the main show, you know, in terms of writing and production. So I don't know. The show is a lot more deliberate than the comics, I find. So, you know, in terms of pacing. So maybe in the next two seasons.
Yeah, I'm interested because Glenn, you know, used to be, you know, he's a very different character than he was at the start, obviously. And in the next season, let's say of the comics, let's call it, when he dies, sort of Maggie ascends to a leadership role in the city state. And that is a really interesting arc for her. And I kind of want to see that part of it. I don't like Glenn as a character as much as I used to. I wouldn't be too sad about it, but I'm interested. Yeah. What about the spinoff? You want to talk about that? They had an ad for it.
You should end the spoiler talk then.
Oh, yeah. Now it's time to end Walking Dead spoilers. We are no longer talking about the comic world. All right, let's talk about the Walking Dead spinoff. They had an ad for it. It was called The Fear. The Fear.
Fear of the Walking Dead.
Fear the Walking Dead.
They seem to be a as-it's-happening virus outbreak series set in Los Angeles.
Like all the stuff that happened while Rick was in the coma, basically, that we're getting to see now.
Right.
Huh. Yeah, that they couldn't afford to do before.
Right, yeah. I'm in as long as they don't go into all that baloney stuff they did at the CDC at the end of season one, which really kind of soured me to the show for a while. What are you guys hoping to see out of it?
Well, I'm not going to not watch it.
Yeah.
let's not be crazy here. But yeah, I'll definitely I'll check it out. I'm not I don't know if I'm going to lock it in yet as appointment viewing, but I'm definitely going to see what's up.
What do you think, Omar?
I'm kind of bummed that it's Los Angeles. Like I pretty much anywhere else I'd like to see. I mean, I would like to see it like in Alaska or in a foreign country. I'm not really thrilled by the idea of, you know, places that look like they could be anywhere else. Like they've tried to make everything look like from Georgia look like every other part of the Southeast.
Right.
So yeah, I don't know about the location. I mean, it'll just depend on the characters on how interesting they are and whether, and I guess it's not going to have anything to do with the comic if I'm not mistaken, or the video games. It's going to be really its own thing.
Yeah. Well, it's nice to have that freedom, I guess. Tara, what do you think?
I don't know if I care if Carol's not in it.
What do you guys think of it being a prequel of sorts? Anybody have prequel fatigue?
Eh.
It's different maybe because we don't know what's going to happen necessarily. We know that there is an outbreak, but that's pretty much it, right? It's not like a prequel of, you know, Rick's, you know, Rick on in his prowler, giving tickets to people on the highway. It's not that prequel.
Right.
Yeah.
If we get a Mike Ermitrite episode, I'm on board.
I mean, I almost wish that it was going to be like, I mean, I'm sorry that we know sort of what the timeline is going to be, because to me, the sort of like the Walking Dead meets Contagion aspect of it is really interesting. But if we know that that's only going to last like a month or however long Rick was in a coma, meh, like then I feel like it's just going to turn into The Walking Dead.
Right. I do wonder.
The normal show.
Yeah.
Too fast.
Kind of makes you wonder what the end game is for the series.
Right.
Well, they said it is going to catch up at some point. Like it's going to, I guess, accelerate and be along the same timeline, but it's just going to start earlier, I guess.
Yeah.
So it'll be like the CSI franchise.
It'll cross over every couple months.
Yeah. All right. Well, I guess we'll find out fall 2015. That's when that starts, along with like five other shows that they were advertising. That one called Humans, and as Tara said, Humans.
Heard of them.
Heard of them.
Does anyone have like final thoughts that they would like to say about this season or this episode?
I just hope Carol threatens more Andersons, because she's threatened Sam, she threatened Pete. At some point, she's going to have to threaten Jesse.
Yeah, I agree.
So just get the whole set.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, what a great character she's become.
Carol is the best.
Yeah.
Yeah, she's
so awesome.
Phenomenal.
It's also, it's funny because Carol is my mother's name. So a lot of times when I'm watching this, I'm like, yeah, that's what my mom would do.
I'm perfectly fine with them front loading the action with all the good actors, which would be Carol, would be Morgan, would be, you know, all the people that can actually act and really hold the center, Michonne. I'm fine as long as those storylines are in the foreground and everybody that is not as good acting wise kind of stays in the background.
Carl, stay there, Carl.
Hi, Libby.
Hi, Mom.
We just finished watching season 8, episode
11?
Yes, of Face Off. Can you describe the challenge, please?
This challenge, they went to a park and found kids who imagined a lot.
Do you think that they just found them out of nowhere? They were just hanging out there?
No. Oh. They were actually belonging in the challenge, so they were actually chosen for the challenge.
Oh, okay.
So what happened is the kids lined up, and when Mackenzie said go, they ran to a contestant.
And then what did they have to do with the contestant?
They had to tell them their imaginary friend, and then the contestant had to make it. Now, I'm going to tell you one thing about Logan's. So, Logan's friend, I forgot her name, but, like, she wanted, like, coral reef, hearts for tail, a pet dolphin.
A tail on what, though?
On the mermaid.
Right. What did Logan say?
Do you know how much days I have to do this? No pet dolphin.
And you liked that, didn't you?
It was kind of silly.
Mm-hmm. And how did the challenge go? Did everybody have an easy time doing the challenge?
No. Emily actually found out how much Emily missed her family.
Mm-hmm. And did she do big hair?
No.
And what did V. Neil say about that?
That she was getting tired of big hair?
That was last week. This week she said, oh, this would have been a good week to do big hair. Make up your mind, V.
Yeah, make up your mind, V.
Jeez. I thought it was pretty cool that Emily made her own kind of velvet on the makeup that she made.
What's velvet?
It's a fabric that is soft.
Like the shirt that you're wearing right now?
Sort of, but this is fleece.
Oh.
So when...
Two different things. Mm-hmm.
And so when...
Is velvet softer or harder? Or smoother?
Probably softer. I don't know. I don't feel a lot of velvet versus fleece. I'm sure Dave Cole will make fun of me about that.
Stupid.
Dave Cole, you can tell everyone if you think that velvet or fleece is softer.
Velvet is the smoothest, softest substance known to mankind.
And so you didn't tell us. Who's your favorite?
I liked Emily's and Darla's.
Darla's was Diamond Face?
Yeah, Diamond Face. Collar. And I loved it how V. Neil was like, when she's done with all those diamonds, pass them to my house and I'll be very happy with them.
Mm-hmm, that's pretty silly.
They're actually just styrofoam, V.
Yeah. Who's the winner this week?
Adam.
And what did his makeup look like?
It looked like a big giant Godzilla something.
Mm-hmm.
Looked kind of like a monster slash Godzilla. And I feel like Godzilla is some sort of monkey. I do not watch Godzilla shows.
Not yet, no. I've never seen Godzilla.
Me neither, because I'm just six.
Right. And
wait, Godzilla isn't okay for six-year-olds? Or just kind of weird?
I think that it might be weird for you.
Okay.
And who's the loser this week?
Ben.
What? And do you remember why he got eliminated?
Because his face looked like he just forgot to paint. Like, oh, I'll paint them later. And then he didn't actually paint them a good job.
He did a three-headed monster, and it had a lot of fur on the body, and it ended up not working out very well.
Why don't you just test it?
Or
you can't test it.
No, that's not something you could test. He just should have made the sculpture a little less...
A little less to what the kid wanted.
Yeah, he did too many details. Because Ben was eliminated, who else was eliminated?
Anthony.
That's right. By that judge.
By that judge? What's that mean?
Goodbye to that judge.
Oh.
So, Liv, if you were selected to be one of the kids on that episode, which contestant would you run to?
Emily.
And what would your imaginary friend look like?
I would try to make it like a princess fairy.
A princess fairy? Would there be anything unusual about her face or her body?
Yes. Her face would actually be the shape of like, it would be like a heart-shaped diamond. Like, remember that one I got on Valentine's Day? That clay jewel that my friend gave me?
No.
Well, I'll show you it after. Okay. It would be like that face, and then the same jewels on the pink dress and stuff.
Would you ask Emily to do a big wig?
Okay, I feel like I would just do pink long hair instead of a big puffy wig. Like that puffy. Just a little puffy.
It's about half a foot.
Half a foot. Okay. Puffy.
Thanks for speaking with me this week, Liv.
You're welcome, and see you in the, I don't know if it's finale, but 5 contestant round.
Yes.
I'll just say 5 contestant finale.
Works for me.
All right, everybody, it's time to go around the dial, and we're going to start with Tara.
I have to change what I put in the doc because I went to bed at 7:30 last night and didn't actually watch Call the Midwife. But Call the Midwife is back, everybody. Instead, I would like to talk about Going Clear, which is the HBO's Scientology documentary, which aired as we record this last night. And it was so good. I had very high hopes for it because I read the book that it's based on. No big deal. And it didn't disappoint. The book is obviously a different experience because, you know, it's a nonfiction book and it's scrupulously researched and goes into a huge amount of detail. But what the book can't do that the movie can is show you so much super crazy stuff, not just like Scientology recruiting videos and an actual music video of a song that they wrote called We Stand Tall, which is funny because David Miscavige, who's the current leader of the church, is very, very short, like shorter than Tom Cruise. However, it also goes all the way back to like before the church was even founded, when L. Ron Hubbard was like hanging out with that Satanist guy, Jack Parsons, who started the Jet Propulsion Lab. Remember when Pam told us about that day?
Yep.
They have like footage of weird black mass-ish type of ceremonies at his house and stuff. Like, I don't know how they even got this footage or why this footage exists. But anyway, it's amazing. It's
so
amazing.
Because evil people are usually scrupulous documenters for some reason.
Right.
Yeah.
Fair enough. If you know a lot about Scientology, like if you read a ton of exposés and stuff about it, this might not be that interesting to you. However, just because there's not like a lot of new revelations about the Xenu origin story or how the Sea Org works or any of that. If you already know what these terms even mean, this probably isn't for you because it won't go deep enough into detail, but it totally worked on me. And I thought the interviews with the people that they got were great, especially having it happen at this point in time when so many of the people that were like big in the church in the 90s have since left and are, you know, turning their back on it and telling all kinds of crazy, terrible stories about shit that happened to them. Scientology is a fascinating subject. That's all I'll say without Dave censoring me. And if you haven't watched Going Clear, you definitely should. Did either of you guys watch it? I guess you didn't because you were watching 17 hours of The Walking Dead last night.
It's a little busy.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was on a plane.
Fair enough.
In my defense, I'm not censoring you. I'm just being careful. Right. Do you remember when we used to do a site called Fame Tracker? We had this thing called the Galaxy of Fame.
Yes.
And it was just like, you know, the famous people of the week. Yes. You know, the closest, the best one being Mercury, closest to the sun. Furthest one being Pluto, RIP planet status. But the last one was Pluto. And 1 week it was...
The Scientologist Galaxy of Fame.
It was, yeah. And the last one was L. Ron Hubbard. And I had a dime-sized headshot that I found somewhere on the net. Put it on there, all sort of woodcutified, and we got a cease and desist from the Church of Scientology.
Like that, boom, the next day.
The next day. So I'm just saying, they got lawyers.
Yes.
I just want to be double careful about what we say. You can say Scientology is not your favorite thing. I don't care.
I'm not saying that.
I'm just saying. You just,
hey, whatever there's a difference works between for people, you know, in terms of making them happy.
Let's sign up today. Omar.
As we're recording this today, they announced that The Daily Show's new host replacing Jon Stewart will be Trevor Noah.
Interesting choice.
Yeah.
He's like so new. He's only been on the show for like 6 months, if that, I feel like.
I feel like if you don't watch The Daily Show every single episode, you probably missed him because he's only been on two or three times. And I don't know, Tara, have you seen his segments?
Yeah, I have.
I did not find them that funny. I think he's interesting. I think I think the points that he's making are interesting. I didn't find him particularly hilarious. So I don't know. But
he's
not my
favorite of the correspondents that are currently on. Leaving off the ones who are leaving, like Jason Jones and Samantha Bee, I think is leaving shortly too. I would have picked Jordan. What's his face?
Oh,
I forget
yeah,
his last name. That guy, Jordan Klepper. He's much funnier to me.
It seems weird to me that after all that kerfuffle about Jessica Williams being too inexperienced for it, that they pick him. But after all that, and she's too young, and she'll get her chance, and then they pick someone who's 31 and has only been on the show a few times. So
yeah.
But if you're saying he makes interesting points but is not that funny, it sounds like he's a great replacement for Jon Stewart.
He's perfect.
Burn.
Sorry, John.
He'll be
Jeff.
Fine.
Orphan Black, this is coming back in a couple of weeks. Premiering season 3 is premiering on BBC America on the 18th, I believe. But thanks to some connections I've got, I was able to view a screener of the season 3 premiere. And it's good. I was a little worried at the end of last year that the new male clones would kind of steal the thunder of the original Clone Club, but so far that doesn't appear to be the case. It's still everything you like about Orphan Black, sex and violence and violent sex, and clones impersonating clones, clones in jeopardy, and
clone dry humping, clone makeout sessions,
all that. There is that. Awesome. And there's also probably the nuttiest new character voice from Tatiana Maslany that we've heard yet. You will literally not believe it's happening.
Whoa.
Awesome.
Interesting. Yep.
Cannot wait. Awesome. Tara Ariano, wake up. Tara, I needed to deputize me.
Oh yeah, go ahead, Dave. I empower you to fight wig crime in my stead.
Excellent. Let's talk about Scandal. In particular, let's talk about Flashback Cyrus and Flashback Cyrus's hair. Oh boy, man. There are shows that sometimes don't realize that they're overreaching. And then there's shows where they have to know they're overreaching and they just say, fuck it, let's do it.
The thing about Flashback Cyrus is that in the latest episode, they're flashing back to a scene where he's with he's about to propose to his wife.
Yes.
And she's telling him he doesn't have to wear a tie with this outfit. And he says something like, maybe if my name was Crockett. Okay.
Yeah.
If we're talking about the Miami 80s. Vice days, there's no way Jeff Perry should still be playing that character because that was like
30 years ago.
He does not look 30 years younger in these flashbacks. They obviously
don't
have
the light
budget
all they
to...
want. They can Vaseline the lens all they want. He's still a craggy man.
Yes.
And it happens to the best of us. We grow old. We get crags.
Yes.
But don't try to play a 30-year younger version of yourself.
Especially not in a wig that's like a Phil from Last Man on Earth wig that's not period appropriate and looks terrible.
Oh, it's so bad. I really,
his current day wig is not great either, by the way.
I really kind of tempted to start like one of those change.org petitions to see if we can get the creators of Scandal to like pony up some dough to hire an age-appropriate look-alike actor to play him in these flashbacks, because they're so, they take you out of it so much.
And he looks embarrassed to be doing
this. Well, he should be. As he should. Terrible.
I know, but I'm saying that's also distracting. Yeah.
Ooh, all right, I got another one. David T. Cole, Tech Cop. All right, the latest episode of The Good Wife aired last night as we record, had a storyline about like a torrent site and blah,
it's called
blah.
Wharfmaster, yeah. Not the Pirate Bay.
Right. And one of the parts of the case that they're hammering on was, did the people that run the site know that there were illegal downloads on the site, and da 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 da. They go back and forth and their argument changes a bit. And at one point they're saying,
we're not going to try and argue copyright infringement anymore. Right. Now we're going to argue trademark tarnishment.
Right. And they do that by saying, showing that the ads on the page are hardcore pornography site ads. And they're saying, well, now you're associating our movie with that. Fair enough. That's an argument. And then the defendants come back and say, well, actually, the way it works is that you saw this based on cookies left by the creepy old man lawyer guy.
Howard.
Who was obviously surfing porn sites, and the ads serve back to you based on your interests in your browser history. That is also true, that ads do that. Certainly. This is why when you go to Amazon.com and look up some product or buy a product, usually you end up seeing ads for that very product on different sites that you visit. However, the next beat of that argument should have been saying that, well, actually, the only advertisers that these sites can get are hardcore porn sites.
Yes.
You don't have to visit one porn site ever. You go to a torn site and it'll just be porn is. Site
right.
ads
it's
on
not
it.
Like they're serving you ads for Will It Fit, which is one of the sites, because I had to screenshot it for my post on the
Will
episode.
It Fit.
Will It Fit.
That's pretty good. Yeah.
It's not bad. But it's not like it's between that and like a Zulily ad.
Right.
Like that's all there is. It's not
and
just because you're
I would
a pervert.
Forgive that on a different show's on a different show, but you know,
but Good
Wife
Good
has
Wife
this reputation for being pretty good with tech, and generally they are, but this was a misstep, and Tech Cop is on the case.
I know what you're thinking, and sure, I knew Higgins and I were getting a little out of hand, but if there's a fourth thing that Higgins and I have in common, it's an adult, sensitive, rational attitude towards our problems. We've always known where to draw the line.
You're missing Dave's dancing right now.
All right, everybody, it's time for the canon, and I am submitting this week's episode. It is Magnum PI Season 7, Episode 8, known as Paper War. All right, guys, we start the episode as a burglar is sneaking into Robin Master's estate. He's messing around with a estate computer, and suddenly a self-destruct warning appears on the screen, and the burglar proceeds with the process. What is he doing? He's destroying the computer. Higgins, armed with a pistol, turns on the lights and orders the intruder to freeze. Turns out, of course, it is just Magnum, and he's playing a video game. A video game that is so challenging that if you die in it or stop the game, it will erase itself, and you can never play again. Higgins is unimpressed and ejects the disc.
Higgins, what are you doing? No! Oh, my God! Now I'm going to have to buy TC a new game. I told you couldn't turn it off. It's programmed to erase if you stop it.
That'd be ridiculous. Why should anyone devise such a toy?
Because Siege of the Seventh Galaxy is not a toy. It is designed for the adult who yearns for the risk and challenge of true life intergalactic combat. Stop! What are you doing? I'm reformatting. Oh, my God!
You've destroyed New Delhi.
Huh. What?
My second campaign in India. 3 months of mind-wrenching labor, 5 complete chapters, an entire era of my life gone. Why did you reformat the main drive?
I was trying to delete it. That game cost $59.95.
Game? You dare to mention that game at this moment? New Delhi is lost.
Well, so is the Seventh Galaxy.
Yes, games did cost that much back then. Tara was very surprised when we watched this, but I do remember it well. PC games, quite expensive back then. All right, so there is the catalyst for the episode Paper War, an episode you may remember if you're a fan of Magnum or watched it back then as the escalating prank episode, or also the one where Magnum challenges Higgins about his true identity. All right, so back to the episode. In retaliation for losing his in-progress memoirs, Higgins revokes Magnum's Ferrari privileges, that's a big deal, and starts an amazing, immature, tit-for-tat war of wills between Thomas and Higgins. So the next step in this war is Magnum hotwires his car and takes it out to do casework. In retaliation, Higgins reports the car stolen and Magnum is arrested by a state trooper, leading to this confrontation back at the estate and the introduction of a curious plotline involving a flower that only blooms in the day, but only in a dark room.
I can't believe you did that, Higgins.
Magnum, please don't yell. Think of the serious.
You bet it's serious.
Mr. Abbott is referring to the serious Mendevillis. You might disturb them before tomorrow's International Hawaiian Show.
Flowers? Are you serious? You want to talk about upset flowers? What about me, Higgins? I'm very upset.
Perhaps you could explain your anger, Mr. Magnum, in cooler tones.
Higgins had Thomas arrested.
Arrested?
Agatha, please. Magnum, am I to understand that it was you who took the Ferrari this morning?
Oh, come on, you knew I had it.
No, I reported it stolen because you vowed not to use it. It never occurred to me that you might go back on your word.
Oh, cute. Okay, just drop the charges. I'll go get the car and we'll forget the whole thing.
I'll drop the charges, of course. But a vow is a vow. You can't drive the car for 6 days and 11 hours, which will give you an opportunity to make an emotional commitment to your groundskeeping duties.
We hear in that, a little footnote, we hear in that clip, Higgins' weird English friend, Agatha, who I've never quite figured out. I think she might be a little simple or something, or maybe she's just extremely British. I'm not sure, but that character comes in and out of the show once in a while, and she's always like that. She's sort of a bird brain, but like a level below bird brain. I think she might have some problems. Anyways, Thomas throws himself into this punitive groundskeeping duty you heard Higgins talk about at the end of that clip. He does so with a weed whacker.
You've just destroyed my chance to become the first person to exhibit a day-blooming serious Mendevillis. You know how hard I've worked on this project. You've gone too far.
Higgins, they weren't blooming.
Of course they're not blooming. They'll only bloom during the daytime in a dark room. I thought they were useless. Honest. I'm sorry. I just got emotionally committed.
It's a logical error. I understand.
Uh-oh, guys. It's on. Higgins is mad.
Before you proceed, I just noticed that in that clip, you can hear the bird that we can always hear around here.
Oh, yeah. So then Magnum checks in on the serious flower later that day in this delightful little bit of Magnum being a dick.
What's the condition of the serious? Not serious, I hope.
I'm glad you can find humor in the situation, Mr. Magnum.
Yeah, I'm glad I can, too.
So in that clip, we hear Mr. Obutu again, and you heard him in a clip earlier. He's helping Higgins with the serious flower. He plays into the case Magnum is working on, sort of behind. It's sort of like the B-plot that glues this episode together, but it's not really important unto itself. He helps gets everybody where they need to be for the second half of this episode. All right, so back to this tit-for-tat war they're having. Higgins cuts off the head of Magnum's beloved rubber chicken and presents it to him in Godfather horse-in-bed fashion. Magnum then retaliates by plugging Higgins' miniature cannon, that you might remember from the credits, with cement. Let's toss it to Rick, our good friend Rick, for a recap of the event so far.
You and Higgins have been playing stupid games while I've been out doing your work.
No, Higgins is playing games. I'm just trying to resolve things. I mean, I did make a concrete effort to end this feud.
Hey, it's not funny, Thomas. If you really want to stop this fight, you would have never plugged up his cannon.
He beheaded my chicken.
After you beheaded his flowers.
After he had me arrested.
After you stole the Ferrari.
I didn't steal it.
Which means that the whole fight started over nothing. So drop it and do me a favor. Do your own investigation from now on. I got better things to do.
Magnum treats everybody so poorly in this episode. It is really a delight.
Also, leave the recapping to the professionals, guys.
So now the next step is Higgins donates Magnum's busy closet of beloved trinkets and mementos. You may remember it. It's always messy. He always opens it. Stuff falls out because it's just full of all his treasures. And he donates it, and this is the name of it, to the Home for Incorrigible Boys in Oahu, which sets us up for the iconic measure of this paper war, the detonation of Higgins' hobby project, a stick replica of the bridge from the bridge on the River Kwai, as seen in the opening credits. A lot of series-long props meet their end in this episode. Let's hear the bridge go.
Yes, yes, I'm coming.
We're following a wire into Higgins' office.
Hello. Is anyone there? Hello.
Magnum pulls out the tiniest, cutest little demolition plunger you ever did see.
It's adorable.
Dun 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 dun. Dun da da dun da da dun da 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 dun da da dun da da dun da da.
And end the first half of the episode. Okay, here we go. We're not done yet. Now the second half of the episode is starting.
Whoever it is, I'll have to call you back.
No, Magnum, we talk now. It's Bill Nolly. We need to have a meeting. 2 o'clock in the old abandoned Marina Medical Building. Come alone.
Uh-oh. All right. So the second half of the episode is sort of a bottle episode that takes place in an elevator in the abandoned building you just heard about as Magnum gets that call from a player in the case he's working on. Magnum goes to the building, finds Higgins in the elevator, and then the power is cut and they are stuck between floors and they go at it.
Well, I know he has a reputation. He's a respected businessman.
He's a crook. And he wanted to strike a deal to give me his big casino boss's name. Did you set that up, too?
Of course not.
And why are you here?
You stole the Ferrari again. I followed you to collect it.
If you followed me, how'd you get here first? No, Higgins, you were cooking something up to get back at me for the bridge.
Ah, yes, get back at you. Tit for tat, cut and thrust, an eye for an eye, a Roland for an Oliver.
A Roland for an Oliver?
Childish retaliations to the end. Well, I've cooked up nothing. So claim your victory and end your delirious rampage of devastation.
My rampage? Who devastated my chicken? Who deliriously gave away all my stuff?
How dare you claim equitable vindication? You destroyed my milestone experiment, my most prized possessions, and my history. I merely dispensed with a few baubles.
Baubles?
Yes, Magnum, baubles, toys, a gorilla mask, old baseball cards, a piece of wood given you in your youth by that canine chap.
K-Line, Al K-Line, my role model and one of the greats of the game.
Game? Precisely. It's unnatural for an adult to attach such importance to games and toys.
Oh, and toy bridges are okay, and toy cannons, and sexually maladjusted flowers that you have to speak kindly to. Those are acceptable mature baubles for the mature adult.
And then, guys, and then it starts to get real personal.
Simply that there are so-called professions that only 40-year-old adolescents desperate to prove their virility would practice.
Well, whatever I'm trying to prove, at least I'm doing it in the present. Beats living off the laurels of an alleged past.
Alleged past? Are you suggesting that I lie about it?
I am suggesting that some people just don't have much of a past, so they make one up.
Ouch. All right. Meanwhile, Rick and TC, and TC has lost A, $60 on a video game that erases itself, and B, a $1,200 camera thanks to something that happened with Magnum and the case he's working on. Here's a scene that illustrates just how much of a dick Magnum is being in this episode.
Look at this mess.
Thomas is definitely out of hand. We solve his case for him, and he doesn't even bother to show up to thank us.
Which means he could be in some kind of trouble.
Yeah, he sure is in trouble. $1,260 worth.
Would you just forget about that stuff until we find Thomas and Higgins?
No.
Why is it our job to find them? Why is it our job to do his job? Why am I out of a camera and a disc that I never even got a chance to use?
Hey, wait a minute, look at this.
Yeah, yeah, says Rick, shut up. But TC got a good point. He's out of a lot, and he's been asked to, by Thomas time and time again this episode to do this for him, do that for me. You got to develop films. The only way I can get the camera. He's really using his friends a lot in this episode. All right. Back in the elevator, Higgins is jumping up and down in an effort to get the elevator moving again.
Oh, come on. If I was doing the jumping, you'd think I looked funny.
But I'd have the decency not to laugh.
It has nothing to do with decency. You can't laugh. You know, in all the time I've known you, I have never actually seen you have a great big belly laugh.
People of proper breeding do not belly laugh.
They are still mad about everything that's happened. And while bringing up Higgins' in-progress memoirs that were erased, we get the first hint of the Higgins is Robin Masters plot point.
You're calling me a liar again.
I'm calling you an exaggerator. Your memoirs read like a bad novel. Not that it's bad writing. No, it's kind of exciting, very imaginative, very professional. Not like that cheap pulp that Robin writes.
How dare you?
I was just quoting you. You're the one who's always referring to Robin's writing as cheap.
I never said cheap. It's just not serious writing. That's the only real difference between the memoirs and the novels.
The memoirs? The novels?
I was using the article "the" to compare the works rather than the writers.
Sure.
And now let's hear from the construction workers outside the building.
Well, it's a big commitment, this marriage stuff, Dave. If I marry Donna, what about Sally?
What about this job? Get busy.
Yeah, what about this job? And what, pray tell, is the job at hand? We will find out at the end of this clip where everything comes to a head.
Explain why you're here. I still say you know more than you're telling. What happened, Higgins? Did Nolly double-cross you, too?
I came to find my stolen Ferrari.
Oh, that's it! Ha! Ha! That settles it.
Settles what?
You said your Ferrari. Again. You have done that one too many times, Higgins.
I meant Mr. Masters' Ferrari.
No, you didn't. You do lie about yourself. It all adds up, the writing, the little my slips of the tongue.
What on earth are you talking about?
The big lie, Higgins. Admit it. You're Robin. You are Robin Masters.
I'm laughing at the sheer absurdity of the accusation.
No, no, no. You're laughing because you're trying. You have never laughed like this. Now admit it. You spent all these years pretending to be Robin's employee because you didn't want anybody to know that you write cheap pulp novels.
And who, may I ask, is the man we know and address as Robin Masters?
I don't know, some little guy with a voice like Orson Welles and a body like Truman Capote that you hired to pose as Robin. That was very interesting casting. You weren't satisfied with a nom de plume. You developed this whole persona to create the kind of playboy you envisioned writing cheap pulp so you could devote yourself to serious writing.
Oh, please, I can't stand it.
You can't stand the truth. Oh, come on, please. I remember all the little slip-ups, like the time Robin called you sir. And why is it that you know exactly when he's going to call and exactly what he's going to say? And why does Jonathan Quayle Higgins get these very legal-looking letters from Robin's publishing company?
Occasionally, Mr. Masters asked me to look over minor documents for him.
Minor documents? Checks, contracts, approvals for galley sheets.
You steamed up in my mail.
Aha! Your mail! Demolition sirens?
Yeah, uh-oh, series over, everybody dead. All right. So obviously the building collapses. Magnum and Higgins ripped up the floor and disabled the brakes and were able to get out just in time to emerge all dusty and gross. Yay. We end the episode back at the estate where Magnum and Higgins make a kind of peace.
You won't admit that you came there to help me out, will you? Just like you won't admit that you're Robin.
No, I won't listen to that ridiculous theory again.
Sure, Robin.
And for your information, Mr. Masters does ask me to inspect all of his important papers.
Of course. Why not? Robin should check out Robin's papers. Anyway, I am going surf skiing for a while. Kid stuff, I know, but I do enjoy it. Have fun rebuilding your toy bridge. The cement is out of your toy cannon. When you want to play with it.
Magnum, I too have a confession to make. I did indeed want the last trick, the last one-up. But so goes the game.
You're a good loser, Robin.
Smash cut to Magnum's surfboard, ski, kayak thing slowly falling apart in the ocean as he paddles out and slowly sinks. And Higgins gets the last laugh. End of episode, Paper War. All right. Why is this episode canon worthy, you ask? Number one, it is tight. There is a lot of set pieces and scenes in 40 minutes, and they all pretty much hit. It is funny. The Paper War is a mean-spirited, nasty, and hilarious affair. Everyone is a dick, but still it manages to be lighthearted. It sets up bigger things. The Robin Masters allegations were a big moment for the show. Everybody was waiting for it. And while they never came out and said whether Higgins is or isn't Robin, come on, guys, he's Robin. The amazing plot devices, let's go over them. A video game so realistic you can only play it once. A flower that only blooms in the darkness of daylight. And the destruction of the many props that were in the show for a long, long time, including the credits. It captures the mischievous side of Magnum P.I. and is a character-centric piece where the case takes a back seat and yet everything still shines. Vote this in, ladies and gentlemen, or you hate joy and television. Take it away.
Why don't our guests start us off? Omar, go first.
Boy, I don't hate joy, so I don't know what I'm going to do here. I actually was not someone who watched Magnum P.I. growing up. I think it might have been just like 2 or 3 years out of my age range when it was on. I think my parents watched it, but I didn't.
Omar is 17.
I think I was maybe like 4 or 5 when it started, maybe.
Yeah.
So yeah, it was not a Magnum P.I. fan. I've sort of come to appreciate it later in life from people like Dave kind of talking about it. So I actually went back and watched the pilot because I had never seen it. In order to kind of acquaint myself. And it's amazing how little changed from the pilot to that as far as the tone, as far as how much ease Tom Selleck has in front of the camera. He's just like so incredibly easy on the eyes and easy on – he's just so
– And his giggle is genuine and infectious, don't you agree?
He has a lot of charisma.
Yeah.
He is incredibly charismatic from the pilot, from the jump. So I was really impressed with that. And really the relationship between him and Higgins – the tone is set for that from the very beginning, and I don't know how much it changed over the years between then and that, but it's a really good looking show. Like it doesn't look cheap. It looks very expensive, and well considered. So yeah, I really enjoyed it, and that was the stuff I liked the most from the pilot too, was the kind of back and forth and the stuff with Higgins. So to see it kind of play out through an entire episode was really pretty awesome, because that was the stuff that if I had to cherry pick stuff from the beginning, that would have been the stuff that I was like, well, let's just make a show of that stuff. And that's what it feels like. It's like they took those best parts and just let's just go nuts with just this one element of Magnum's life. I really, really enjoyed it. It's really fun and just kind of goes back to an era where stuff didn't all look like it was shot on a soundstage.
Jeff?
Yeah, I enjoyed it too. I was also not a regular Magnum viewer. I don't have Omar's excuse. I was old enough to watch it at the time, but never really did regularly. I think my older sister was a fan. But it was – watching this really taught me a lot about the series. There was a lot of stuff that I knew from cultural osmosis, just knowing about TV shows in general. This was one of them. But this taught me a lot about the relationship between the characters. And I liked that it was so character driven, and that it wasn't, just another cookie cutter mystery type show, that the mystery was more of a framework and a background to hang the main story on. And there was kind of a reversal of what you usually see in this thing. And of course, you know, the building destruction scene, that's not something you saw every week on network TV back then, and it was clearly not CGI. So, you know, I think everything fit together real well.
This is one that Dave has cherry-picked for me to watch before, because I also didn't watch it when it was first on, because I'm a girl. It was not for me, or so I thought when I was, you know, 7, 8, 9, however old I was when this was on. But yeah, I love this episode, not just because watching it with Dave is makes it more fun because he loves it so much. But yeah, as you say, Jeff, it's so the character stuff is so well done, and like just getting to see, you know, the different that Magnum's hobby is playing this video game and Higgins' hobby is growing this incredibly complicated crossbred weird flower, tells you so much about the two of them. And the kind of bottle episode within the episode of the two of them in an elevator is really well executed. I thought Magnum is a gigantic prick. And all of his, the fact that the episode doesn't make you hate him is, again, testimony to what Omar was saying about how charismatic and likable he is and how much he pops on camera, because all of his escalations are way worse than anything Higgins does to him. Like, that really could have ruined his little can, and he killed plants. Like, go and buy another rubber chicken. Who gives a shit, you weirdo? But I also love at the end that Higgins does produce the stuff that he had donated because they don't want it, and calls it his baseball costume, which I thought was adorable.
That was a nice touch.
And I will always have a soft spot for Magnum PI and Magnum himself, because this is exactly what my dad looked like at the time. Yeah. He had a mustache exactly like that and dimples and looks really a lot like Tom Selleck in the mid-80s.
A couple footnotes before we send us to a vote. That thing that Higgins says when he's going over all the, is like a Roland for a whatever it was.
An Oliver.
For,
I assume that's fencing terms.
No, it's actually, I looked it up. It's sort of like two immovable objects. It's from two knights of yore that were equally matched.
Sure.
So it's just like, you know, it's a zero, you know, it's like a zero sum game. Is that right?
Yes.
Yeah. And the other one was, I forget. So let's put it to a vote. Tara.
Yes.
Omar.
I say yes.
And Jeff.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. Magnum PI Season 7, Episode 8, Paper War. You are hereby inducted into the Extra Hot Great Canon. Thank you, folks.
Americans love a winner.
Yeah.
And will not tolerate a loser.
Nope.
All right, everybody. It is time for Winner and Loser of the Week. This week's winner are the X-Files, fans of the X-Files TV show.
X-P-H-Isles.
That's right.
Yes.
X-Files set up for a 6-episode pickup where they left off.
Yeah.
Years later.
Where they left off of the last movie, I guess.
I suppose, yeah. Which
no
I never
saw.
No one saw. But the reason why I think they're the winner of the week is because they are not doing just a Myth Arc 6 episodes. They have already confirmed that it will be a mix of the Alien Arc and some Monsters of the Week. And that is sort of the magic mix for the X-Files. It doesn't get too dark with the alien stuff because they mix it up with the Monster of the Week stuff. And it doesn't get too procedural because they have the Myth Arc. And it was always a great balance they struck with that show. And if they didn't do it, it wouldn't quite be the same show. So I'm glad that they made that decision. So X-Files, fan of the X-Files, you are here. The winner of the week. Tara, who's our loser?
Homophiles, I guess. Looking was canceled by HBO at the end of its second season, like 3 days after the finale. With extreme prejudice, I feel. It was often a controversial show. A lot of viewers would say it was not gay enough, but I always liked it. Not that it was really not targeted directly at me per se. But they did some really nice stuff in the second season, especially with the friendships between the characters, not so much the relationship stuff. And so I will miss it. It's sad for culture. But having said that, do you know what time it is?
Is it game time?
It's non-regulation game time.
Oh my God.
Game time.
Yeah. let me reposition myself because this is a game, a non-regulation game time written by moi.
Yay!
This game is called, and it's a non-regulation game time because Sarah is not with us this week. This game is called Third Bananas. Let me explain. When it came time to write a game time that known dummy David T. Cole would have a fighting chance at, and I say that with love, I knew I had to stay in the action slash adventure lane, so that was my starting point. But focusing only on the shows in that genre from the 80s, aka his youth, would have been kind of thin. So to keep it reasonable, I also threw in action adventure series from our current decade. So stay with me. Here's how the game works. I will give you the name of an actor who was third billed in an action-adventure TV series that's either from the 80s or the 2010s.
All right.
And the shows were drawn from TV.com's list of the top whatever shows in that genre from each of those decades.
Okay.
So I'm going to give you the name of the third bill actor. If you can give me the name of the show from the third bill performer alone, you get 3 points.
Holy cow.
If you need a hint, I'll give you the name of the second billed person.
Uh-huh. The second banana.
Right. And then it's worth 2 points.
Uh-huh.
And if you want a second hint after that, you may not need it, but I'll tell you whether the show is from the 80s or the
10s. Oh, so we never get the top banana.
And then it gets, no, you never get the top banana. Then it's worth 1 point. Excellent. However, there's also a bonus opportunity. Uh-oh. If you get the title at the 3 point mark, so just from the third billed person, you can earn one additional bonus point by giving me the two top billed performers.
Oh.
Doesn't matter which order.
All right.
So I have a couple of notes before we start. Because this is TV and...
I just want to say the premise of this game is very appealing.
Appealing. So here are my notes. Because this is TV and stars come and go, in some cases, the two people who are top billed on IMDb are not the people that any reasonable person would say are the two.
Right.
Not many cases, but there are a couple. And in those cases, I subbed in the two people that a reasonable person would guess.
Got it.
And then one more note, shout out to the Leonard Maltin game from Douglas Movies, which this has some in common with. Sorry, I keep turning around and looking at Dave. He tells me not to do that. Okay. This format definitely borrows from Shamelessly. So there are 60 questions and a tiebreaker from the 90s.
Ooh.
Are you ready to play Third Bananas?
Yes.
Since you're all valued guests, I'm going to arbitrarily go east to west. So we'll start with Omar, go to Jeff, and then end with Dave.
Excellent.
Oh boy.
I'm ready to play. Omar, your third banana is Duncan LaCroix.
Jesus, who the fuck is that? I am going to need a clue.
All right. Your second build person is Sam Hugan, H-U-E-G-H-A-N. These are all random, by the way.
Very random.
Sam. Oh. I'm going to need another clue. I have no idea.
It's from the tens.
Is it The Following?
No, good guess, though. It is Outlander. Oops.
Outlander.
Outlander. Outlander. Okay.
By the way, guys, I'm keeping score here. You don't have to keep score.
Okay.
Zero, Dave.
Acknowledged.
Jeff, your third banana for 3 points, if you name the title, is Adrian Zemed.
Ooh.
TJ Hooker.
Correct, for 3 points.
With William Shatner and James Darren?
No, Heather Locklear.
Heather Locklear, okay.
That was a good pull, though.
That was very nicely done.
We only get one guess, right? We're not guessing each.
Like if you guess at the 3 point mark and you're wrong.
We have to weigh the risks.
Yeah.
Got it.
All right, Dave.
Yes.
Jessica Nicole.
Jessica?
J-A-S-I-K-A.
Huh.
Is this worse than Jessica?
Jessica Nicole. All right. Give me a hint.
Joshua Jackson. This is definitely a show you have watched.
All right. Well, I'm just going to guess Fringe.
Correct!
All right. That's 2 points, right?
For 2 points.
Who's who's that person?
That's Astrid.
Oh, okay.
I think John Noble was like, and John Noble, so he's
right
really down the list.
Yeah,
okay,
tricky.
Back to Omar. Richard Basehart.
That's not a real name.
It is a real name.
Or it's a Care Bear.
I only know him as a Mystery Science Theater reference. I might need the first clue.
Edward Mulhare is your second build person.
That's also a Care Bear.
Holy shit, what is that? Is there one more clue, or am I?
It's from the '80s, not from the '10s.
Oh shit! I should probably know that. Oh jeez. I don't know. Trapper John MD. I don't know.
I like the track you're on. That is not correct. The answer is Knight Rider.
Oh, jeez. Wow.
All right,
wow.
Jeff.
I wonder if Sarah would have got that one.
She probably would have. Harrison Page is your third banana.
Okay, I'm going to need a clue.
Anne-Marie Martin is second build.
And I'm going to need another clue.
It's from the 80s.
Okay. Oh, I've got nothing.
The answer is Sledgehammer.
Yeah, wow. Sledgehammer, wow.
Dave.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
You're not going to probably get it on the third build person, but okay. You might get it on the second.
All right.
Mark Hamill is your third banana.
Mark Hamill is my third banana. Hamill, what was he in? Well, so it's now or it's
the 10s or the 80s?
Oh, I have a guess for now, but I don't think he's a regular. So I'm going to get the second one.
Brendan Small.
Oh, Metalocalypse.
Correct, for 2 points. The top build person is Tommy Blasha.
I was
Tommy
tempted
Blasha.
To guess the Flash, because I know he's on the Flash.
Oh, he's, not a, he's regular. Not a regular. I think he doesn't start until this week, actually. Okay. All right, back to Omar. Omar's getting really hard.
I'm getting my ass
I'm reading. Sorry, Omar. Paige Turco is your third banana.
Turco. Also
this
known.
Is a person.
This is a person.
I'm going to need a clue.
I think that actually is alternate language instructions from one of those Star Wars turn to page books. Paige Turco.
Your second build person is Bob Morley.
One of our greatest reggae singers.
Decade?
It's currently, well, I'll say it's from this decade, but it's also currently on. There's a bonus in for you.
Somebody's getting a pity.
No, but that's a good guess. You're on the right track.
What was the guess? I talked over it.
He said the vampire. Sorry, that was not correct. I hit the wrong button. Sorry to tease you. You were on the right track in saying The Vampire Diaries because it is a CW show called The 100 or The 100.
Never would have got that either.
All right, Jeff.
Me neither. Yep.
Your third banana is Stephen Chang.
All right. I will need a clue, please.
Dana Elcar, second build.
Elcar?
E-L-C-A-R.
Okay, so I'm thinking 80s then. What was the first name?
Stephen Chang.
Stephen Chang. Nope. I'm stumped.
MacGyver.
Oh.
Dave.
Okay.
All right. I'm ready.
Your third banana is Joel Gretsch.
Joel Gretsch.
G-R-E.
The famous Gretcher. I'm going to need a hint.
Morris Chestnut is second build.
Oh, Morris Chestnut. I recognize that name. Shoot kebabs. Morris Chestnut and the Gritter.
Yep. Joel Gretsch.
Joel Gretsch.
Uh-huh.
Morris Chestnut. Shit. Give me the decade.
2000s. They're 2010s.
Morris Chestnut. Angel.
The answer is V, the V remake.
Okay.
Omar, I have a good feeling about this.
By the way, that V remake was a piece of poo.
It was not good. Omar, Katie Sagal.
Ooh. You got this, Omar.
You got this, Omar.
Oh, action show. Okay, yeah. Sons of Anarchy.
Correct! For 3 points, can you name the two top build people?
Charlie Hunan? Hennen?
It's not Hunan, but yes, I'll give
Hunan,
it to you.
Because I'm hungry.
Yes, Charlie Hunan Kitchen and...
And, Ron Perlman?
No, he's further down. He's in the John Noble slot. It's Mark Boone Jr. was second build.
I wouldn't have gotten that.
Yeah. Well done, Yay. Omar.
Good job, Jeff. Good job, Omar. Now on to Jeff. Your third banana is Bruce Weitz, W-E-I-T-Z, or Z.
Wow. Would that be Hill Street Blues?
Correct!
Whoa.
Nice! Wow, can you name the two top people?
Daniel J. Travanti.
Yes.
And would it have been Veronica Hamill?
No, Michael Warren.
Oh, wow. Of course, Bobby Hill.
All right.
Nicely done, although I take exception with the classification of Hill Street Blues as an action
That's
show.
Why I said up top, it's from the TV.com list. This is not my judgment. This is from the internet.
I'll take it.
David T. Cole.
Yes.
Maybe the easiest one on the list.
All right.
Lou Ferrigno.
Oh, gosh.
Would that be the Incredible Hulk?
Correct.
Oh, my God.
Can you name the top two billed people? I bet you have one and not the other.
Bill Bixby.
Correct.
And Darren...
No.
Krasowitz.
No. Jack Colvin is the correct answer.
What is it?
Jack Colvin.
No, sorry. Sorry, right. Jack. Don't know who you are.
Omar. Stephen Pasquale. Pasquale.
That's a name I recognize.
Mm-hmm. Currently on The Good Wife. This is not The Good Wife.
Yeah, I'm going to need the next one up.
Michael Lombardi.
He's a good supporting character.
Well, I know it's
Lombardi.
A show.
Supporting.
I get it.
Is it Arrow?
No. Alas, it is Rescue Me.
Oh, yeah.
Jeff.
Yep.
Michael D. Roberts.
Okay, clue please.
Melody Anderson.
Oh, if that's not wow. 80s.
Okay. Yeah, it's a very 80s name. It's true.
Very. I remember her from Flash Gordon, but I don't remember what was she on? I don't know.
Does anyone have a guess?
Nope. Tales of Gold Mike.
What if I said Simon McCorkindale?
Would that be... Oh.
This is for points, except just for glory.
Was it Autobahn? Was she
no,
an Autobahn?
No, Manimal.
Manimal.
All right, Dave.
That was my eagle cry.
Dave. Yeah. Joelle Carter.
Joelle Carter. Is this Justified?
Yes. Can you name the top two build people?
All right. Timothy
now remember,
off of his pants.
Correct. That's right. Remember that IMDb is weird.
Yeah, what was your notion about that? Remind me what you said about that.
Oh,
we're going off IMDb, and sometimes
yes.
It's
going
not
off,
who you think
this,
it would
in
be.
This case, I'm going off IMDb.
Jacob Pitts.
No, good yes. guess. Nick Searcy. And that brings us into our first score break.
C, B, or B there, B. All right. Here's our first score break, live from the table beside where I usually stand. Omar is on the board with 3 points, followed by Jeff with 6, and then me with 9. 3, 6, 9, all multiples of 3. What does it mean? Back to turn.
We still have a lot of game to play. Omar.
How many more of these are?
There are 60. Did I not say that at first? Oh, we still have 45 questions to go. All right. Omar. Mm-hmm. Matt Lanter.
Yeah.
Here's an extra hint for you. This is one I bet Jeff knows.
Okay.
D. Bradley Baker is your second build person.
D. Bradley
Baker.
Baker.
I'm afraid that's not correct. I do not know that one.
Oh, okay.
What he meant to say is pronounced Bakur.
Could it be Cagney Lacey?
No. It's the Clone Wars. I know that.
Wow.
Jeff lives with a Star Wars fan. I thought that he might get it. All right, Jeff.
I think Jeff is more of his son probably makes him watch Clone Wars over and over again. He might have known it through osmosis, if anything.
Yes.
Could have happened.
Yeah. All right, here is your question, Jeff. Scott Michael Foster.
That's too many names. can I have a clue, please?
Yes, Carmen Ejogo, Ejogo.
Oh, I've seen that name. Mm-hmm. And recently. So, it's a 2010s one then.
Correct. I'll tell you that for free.
Yeah, appreciate it. I'm stuck. I can't get it.
What if I said Anthony Edwards?
Oh, well then, no.
Oh, 0 hour.
Correct. Okay, Dave.
Oh, 0 hour. How I miss your stupidness.
Okay, Dave, your third banana is Vanessa Ferlito.
The Ferlito. Vanessa Ferlito. I'm going to need the second banana, please, star Ariana.
Aaron Tveit. T-V-E-I-T.
Wow. And I'm going to need the decade.
The tens.
All right. So exotic sounding names, tens, Vampire Diaries.
No, alas. It's Graceland.
Yeah.
The USA show Graceland.
All right.
Back to Omar. Omar, your third banana is Daniel Dae-kim or Dae-kim, D-A-E.
Lust.
Oh, Hawaii 5-0.
Oh, crap.
Dave is
crap,
correct. Crap, it is crap, Hawaii.
Crap. Bum, 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 bum.
All right, Jeff. Minka Kelly.
Oh.
Wow. Wait. Really? Well, I want to say Friday Night Lights, but nope. I don't know if that was actually. Nope. Well, let's go.
I'll give
Friday
you a hint.
Lights.
It's not that one. Jeff, I'm giving you—I don't know why—but I'm giving you a free hint. It's not that one.
Dave's free hint is accurate.
Don't submit that answer.
All right, I know she's on Parenthood. That's all I have on Minka Kelly.
Okay, let me guess. Actually.
Yeah, let him.
Oh,
have,
I'm sorry.
Have another
sorry.
Guess.
All right, yeah.
Your second build person is Michael Ealy.
Michael Ealy. Nope.
And it's from the tens.
Okay,
but it's not on anymore.
But it's not
really
on anymore.
It's really sad that it's not on anymore.
All right.
Okay, sorry, I still don't know.
All right.
Dave, take it.
It is one of the best dumb shows we've had in a while, starring Carl Urban. That was Almost Human.
Correct.
Oh.
And Eads plays the robot.
Yes.
Robot.
All right, Dave.
Yeah.
Your third banana is Michael.
Why did I get that one? Damn picky. All right.
It's picky. Dave, your third banana is Michael Newman.
Michael Newman. That's very generic. Don't know who that is. Give me the second banana. The Chiquita, as we call it.
Well, if you like generic names, uh-huh. You'll love Jeremy Jackson.
Jeremy Jackson and Jack Jeremy both ran for president of Earth, but were defeated by Nixon. No idea. Decade?
80s.
80s. Give me the names once again, just in case.
Michael Newman.
Yeah.
Jeremy Jackson.
That sounds like, of course, Riptide.
Baywatch.
Never seen one episode.
Omar.
Mm-hmm.
Connie Selica.
Oh, that's a name.
I know the decade. I know it's one of two shows. I don't know if I have the right one. What's the next actor up?
Robert Culp.
Oh, I don't know. Not I Spy.
I can picture her in the credits. I can't get the show.
Is it Knott's Landing?
No. It if I said William Cat.
Believe it or not. Greatest American Hero.
Yes.
Shit.
Jeff Alexander.
Shit. Yeah, okay. Yeah.
Catherine Bach.
Dukes of Hazzard.
Yeah. Correct.
John Wolpat and John Schneider.
Correct.
Oh, okay, what's the bonus worth?
1 point.
Okay.
So he gets a total of...
I've seen the lead, Jeff.
That gets four points. Woo! Exciting. Woo. Dave.
Yeah.
John Seda. S-E-D-A.
John Seda. Oh! Shit. I think I know this.
You might.
Oh, John Seda. That sounds so familiar. Damn it. Okay, give me the second one.
Your second banana is Joseph Mazzello.
Joseph Mazzello doesn't help me.
A.K.A. Kid from Jurassic Park. This is not Jurassic Park, the TV series. Does not exist.
No, then it's not what I thought. All right, so... Joseph... I am going to guess... Shit, which one was it? But is it a show? The Pacific.
Correct.
Yeah!
Oh, wow.
Nicely done. Omar.
Wait, who was John Seda? He was the main. He was.
He's the Italian guy.
All American guy.
James Badgdale is the guy you're thinking.
Okay,
of.
Yeah.
From Rubicon, he was.
Did Dave name the two actors?
Pardon?
Did Dave name the two other actors?
No, I only got
a hint, so he didn't get the opportunity. Omar. Charles Hallahan.
Oh damn! Yeah, don't know. I need a clue.
Your next clue, second build,
Linda Mahalahan.
Is Stephanie Kramer. P and an F for no good reason.
It's not Dexter, is it?
Anyone else know?
Nope.
Hunter.
Jeff knows. Oh, it is Hunter. Her.
Okay.
All right.
Phoebe McCall.
Jeff. David Ramsey. EY. Oh.
Okay. EY?
Yep.
Yeah, keep going. Second banana, please.
Katie Cassidy.
Okay, decade?
Tens.
Really? Katie Cassidy from the Tens. All right.
David Cassidy's daughter, Katie Cassidy.
Oh, well then, I have no idea.
It is Arrow.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Lay it on me.
All right, Dave. Peter DeLuise.
Peter DeLuise. Let's go with 21 Jump Street.
Correct. Can you name the top two Bill people?
Oh, boy. Johnny Depp.
Correct.
And... Richard... It's not what I wanted to say because you're shaking your head, but I won't
Too
do that.
Late.
It's different people in different eras, isn't it?
Holly.
Yeah,
Robertson?
It's Holly Robinson. Yep. All right, Omar.
Mm-hmm.
Heather Thomas.
Mm. Oh.
Can I get the next one?
Douglas Barr.
Never would have got that one, but I think I've got an idea what the show is. Jeff, do you know it?
Yep.
Yeah.
Sorry, Omar.
Ah, oh, shit.
Omar's age is really.
Yeah,
I know 80
just on the wrong side of some of these, I think.
If these were like the Colbys and Dynasty, I'd be all over it. it's not TJ Hooker, is it? That we did that.
We've already had that one.
Jeff?
But you said it's not that, so do you want to make another guess?
Is it Dynasty? I don't think it's Dynasty.
Jeff?
The Fall Guy?
Correct.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
All right, Picky Smiles on... Yes, Lee Majors is the top billed person. Picky Smiles on Jeff Alexander. Carlos Bernard.
Oh, 24.
Correct. Right? Now, here's the question. Who does IMDb say are the top two billed people?
Is it Kiefer Sutherland and Mary Lynn Racecube?
Nicely Whoa. Done!
Wow.
Thanks,
well, I recapped that show for how many years? So.
Oh, I know, but I mean, the getting the bonus ones, that's what's hard, because they could be... Well, one would be Kiefer, but it could be like thousands of other people.
Right, they do shuffle through.
They do. This is our last question before the score break. Dave.
Yep.
Billy Piper. Billy with an IE.
Piper. Third build. Ooh. I'm going to need the second build because I'm unsure.
All right, so this is a weird one because the top like four build characters are... Weird.
Okay.
So I'm just going to give you one and you're going to get it or not.
All right.
Matt Smith.
Doctor Who.
Correct.
I wasn't sure if it was Doctor Who or Penny Dreadful. So I needed the second one.
No, it's Doctor Who. Okay. So score break.
All right. Here we are in our second score break, folks. Very exciting game. Omar still with three. No points since the last score break. But I got a good feeling. He's probably doing research as we speak. Jeff following right behind with 14 points. And me in first place in a squeaker with 15 points.
That's true.
So
I maybe shouldn't
Jeff breaking the multiples of three agreement we had before the show probably does not bode well for his chances in the final.
I shouldn't have said where I got this list from because you guys totally could be cheating and we would never know. But anyway, I'm assuming you're
I'm
on your honor slash
obviously.
Don't care enough.
So this is question 31?
This is question 31 for Omar. Thomas M. Wright.
I'm going to need the next one.
This one might actually get it for you, even if you didn't watch the show. Damian Bashir.
I'm thinking Damian Lewis, and I know it's not that.
You could be two things.
Yeah, it's not. Homeland, that's some guess.
Damian, I just realized who he is. Okay, yeah.
Is the bridge.
Yeah.
Oh,
that's what I think of the bridge.
Jeff.
The Blue Bridge.
Chandler Riggs.
The Walking Dead.
Omar.
Andrew Lincoln, and the second would be... Why can't I think of the second would be right now? Is it Norman Reedus now?
No, it's Stephen Yeun. You don't get a buzz for that.
Fair enough.
All right. David T. Cole.
Yes, ma'am.
Robert Lansing.
Robert Lansing?
Mm-hmm.
Second clue, please. Second banana, the taquito.
Oh, God. Keith Zarabajka.
Oh.
S-Z.
The czar.
A-R-A-B-A-J-K-A.
Okay, so decade?
80s.
Okay, names again, please.
Robert Lansing.
Yeah.
Keith Unpronounceable.
Keith Mr. Unpronounceable from Road to Wellville was guest starring in this show in the 80s, full of action and suspense. And second build had a really crazy name, so it's not Riptide. I really want something to be Riptide. It's not Riptide. It was, of course, I don't know. Riptide.
The Equalizer.
Oh.
Omar. Mm-hmm. Mary Carver.
Mary Carver?
Mary Carver.
Oh, Mary Carver.
Mary Carver.
That changes everything.
I need the next one.
Jameson Parker.
Good luck.
Is it what decade?
80s.
Is this Riptide?
Oh, Riptide is a new Benson.
No, it's Simon and Simon.
Oh.
All right, this is one where, okay, it started in the 70s, it ended in the 80s, but the top two people are the original cast. Oh,
so many clues already.
Now you know.
All right, I'll try not to waste it.
Kate Jackson.
Oh, boo.
That would have to be Charlie's Angels.
Correct.
And then Jacqueline Smith and Farrah Fawcett, would we say?
Correct.
All right.
Yikes.
Dave.
Yeah.
Peter Cullen.
Peter Cullen. Ooh, that rain the rings of
bell. Why does Dave know that name?
Peter Cullen. Cullen. Second. The Chiquita, please.
Chris Latta. L-A-T-T-A.
That doesn't help me. Decade?
80s.
Riptide.
What if I said the top billed person was Frank Welker?
Oh, Transformers?
Correct. Omar.
Autobot, stay put.
Omar, your third banana is Fran Kranz, K-R-A-N-Z.
The Dole. Let's start naming these. The Dole. Chiquita's better than Dole.
Can I get the next one?
The what?
Harry Lennix, L-E-N-N-I-X.
Henry?
Harry.
Harry.
Wow.
Makes good air conditioners and heaters.
I was going to say numbers, but numbers.
What if I said the top billed person was Eliza Dushku?
Dollhouse?
Correct.
Ah.
Jeff.
Well, that's tough.
Joshua Gomez.
Don't know. Keep going.
Yvonne Strahovski.
Oh, Chuck.
Correct. Dave.
All right. Yeah. Jeff's running away with this one. All right.
Jeff. No, Dave.
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 Your husband. Yep.
Bruce Campbell.
Bruce Campbell. Third banana on burn notice. Oh, shit.
Nice.
fuck. What's that guy's name? Michael. Shit. Is it the character or actor? Weston?
That's the character.
Shit. But the actor is also Michael something, right?
No, his name is Jeffrey Donovan.
Okay, and then Gabriel Anwar was
correct.
The one, right? Okay,
shit. All right, Omar. Doris Roberts.
Oh, I know this one.
Yep, me too.
Everybody Loves Raymond was probably not an action show in the 80s.
Well, there's that one credit sequence.
Well,
let me get the next one.
Pierce Brosnan.
Remington Steele.
Yay! Good job.
So that was 2 points?
Yes. Jeff.
Yes.
Marta Dubois.
Marta Dubois. Can I get the next one, please?
Jeff McKay. M-A-C-K-K-A-Y.
See, Jeff McKay was the guy I thought it might have been that Italian Cena guy. That's why
oh.
I was getting confused.
Oh.
Earlier. Yeah.
Okay.
Sorry, not
Jeff,
sorry.
Don't let that throw you. That has nothing to do with this.
Not a clue at all.
Marta Dubois and Jeff McKay are your people.
Marta Dubois and Jeff McKay. What decade was that?
80s.
Okay. I do not know.
Okay, wait. Jeff McKay played Mac on Magnum PI, if that helps you at all. He remember
really?
His Navy buddy Mac?
Nope.
Okay.
Like I said, I was not a big Magnum PI.
That,
watcher,
my friends,
but...
is Tales of the Gold Monkey.
Dave is correct. It is Tales
no
of
way.
The Gold Monkey.
Yeah.
I do just watch that.
Everybody's favorite ostracized actor,
Stephen Collins. All right, Dave.
Yes.
Katie Lee, L-E-I-G-H.
This got to be from now, but all right. Second, the Chiquita.
Don Most.
Don Most?
Mm-hmm.
Which Don?
Sometimes credited, well, anyway, Don Most.
Okay, but what, like, lady or guy Don?
Oh, I'm sorry, D-O-N.
D-O-N.
Man Don.
Like Donnie Most from Happy Days, perhaps. But what's he in now? Okay, what was the first one again?
Katie Lee, L-E-I-G-H. Katie Lee
and Donnie Most, probably from now. Won't help me either way anyways. So Donnie Most is now a wizened old kung fu instructor training our first person. This is obviously Hercules, the legendary. What, that's not even this decade. God damn it!
I don't know what made you, but about Katie Lee made you think it was now. But it's Dungeons and Dragons. The top build person is Willie Ames.
The cartoon.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yes.
I wonder if he played Presto, my favorite character.
I don't know. Omar. Emilia Clarke. E M I L I A Clarke with an E.
Game of Thrones.
Correct. Can you name the two top build people?
Is it Lena Headey?
Yes, it's Headey, but I'll give it to you.
Headey. And Sean Bean?
No. Peter Dinklage.
Oh shit, of course. Yeah, makes
sense. Jeff. Yep. Jennifer Cook with an E on the end. Of okay. Cook.
All right, I need the second name, please.
June Chadwick.
Okay. Decade?
80s.
June Chadwick, Jennifer Cook. Wow. No idea.
What if I said the top billed person was Jane Badler?
Oh, then would that be V?
Correct.
Yeah. The original V?
Yeah.
Yes. Dave, this is our last question before our... penultimate score.
Third and penultimate?
Third score. No, well, there's one. There's one more after this.
Nobody
Cam cares. Fong.
I'm sorry, again.
Cam Fong.
Cam Fong.
K-A-M Fong.
Well, that could be anything. I'll need the Chiquita.
James MacArthur.
James MacArthur.
Mm-hmm.
Don't know who that is.
MacArthur.
So, MacArthur.
If that makes a difference.
He will return after these messages. I'll take the decade.
It's from the 1980s.
It's from the 80s. Cam Fong's in it. MacArthur's in it. MacArthur or MacArthur?
MacArthur.
MacArthur.
So Arthur.
My joke doesn't make any sense.
No. You don't know it.
I don't know it, she says.
No, maybe you do, but you're certainly stalling for someone
but
who knows
certainly,
it.
Certainly, obviously, the answer is Misfits of Science. Damn it!
Original Hawaii 5.
No. Wait, 80s?
Well, it ended in the 80s.
That's the black eye on this quiz. All right, score break time. Omar has 8. Hey. Jeff running away with things at 23.
Jeez!
And I am 5 behind at 18.
Wow.
Oh, this never happens.
Still some game to play. Omar. Your third banana is David Mazouz. M-A-Z-O-U-Z.
Mazouz! Do you remember when they used to play the Mazouz at the World Cup games? You can hear
them. Or Zuby Zuby. I'll need the next one.
Your second build person is the one that might probably get it if you know it. Donal Logue.
Was that Terriers?
It was Gotham.
Oh.
There was a few that could have been. Could have been Vikings.
Not with
for
David
a while,
Mazouz.
Too.
Yeah, that kid was on Touch, I think.
I don't know who that is.
He plays Bruce Wayne.
Bruce Wayne.
Oh, okay.
Jeff, your third banana is Brett Gelman.
Okay. Can I have a second banana, please?
Maria Thayer.
Maria Thayer. Brett Gelman and Maria Thayer. Famous for supporting. What decade was this? That's going to help.
It is the tens.
Okay. I have no idea.
Oh, it sounds like Omar knows this one.
Oh, Omar, do you know it?
Eagleheart.
Correct. Chris Elliott in the top slot. Dave.
Yep.
Sandra Santiago.
Sandra Santiago is our dole banana slot. Sandra Sandiego. I'm going to need our Chiquita, please.
Philip Michael Thomas.
Philip Michael Thomas. And that would be the Miami Vicers.
Correct. Omar. Willie Garson.
Oh, I know that name.
Willie Garson. That's kind of a great name.
Let me get the next one.
Tim Decay. D-E-K-A-Y, not like tooth decay.
Garson. What decade?
The tens.
No idea. Blue Bloods?
No, but you're on the right track because it's White Collar.
Oh.
Okay, Jeff.
Yep.
This is maybe the easiest one.
God damn it.
That's lucky for me.
Yay.
Mr. T.
Oh, I'm going to say the A-Team.
Correct.
And then George Peppard and Dirk Benedict were
no,
the other
two? No, Dwight Schultz was billed second.
Wow.
So close.
But that
That's
was
surprising,
great.
Ashlyn.
Okay, Dave.
Yeah. Is this one of the easiest ones?
Well, maybe for you. Gustav Skarsgård.
Oh. Gustav Skarsgård is Vikings?
Correct.
Travis Trimmel? Whatever his name is?
Is that what you think his name is?
I don't know. Yeah, I don't know his name. Something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And then what would IMDb? I played Tarzan. That's who I'm talking about.
Mm-hmm.
Travis
Trimmel is not his name.
Okay, then I don't know. I'm never going to remember.
I mean, you're close, but that's not his name.
Yeah, all right.
All right, Travis Fimmel, not Trimmel.
And then I'll go Daniel Logue.
No, Clive Standen is second build. Okay, Omar, LeVar Burton.
Oh, come on.
Well, but that wasn't the tens, though. It's not Star Trek.
Your other decade is the 80s, Omar.
Oh. Star Trek: The Next Generation.
Yes. And who are the top two build people?
Patrick Stewart and Jonathan Frakes.
Yes.
Nice.
Finally.
Well done.
You're back to a multiple of three. I'm
Good
sure
job.
Happy to know.
Okay, Jeff.
Yes.
Regina King.
Okay. Wow, I should know this. All right. I need the Chiquita, please.
Thank you.
Sean Hatozzi is your Chiquita.
Sean Hatozzi?
Yes.
Regina King? Who are they on?
Do we know who that is?
This is obviously the tens then. Sean Hatozzi's a kid from the faculty, right?
Yes.
And Regina King, I don't, I've seen her in stuff. I do not know. What is it?
I guess.
Do you know, Omar?
I think it's Southland.
That's correct, with Michael Cudlitz in the top slot.
Okay.
Dave.
Yeah.
Josh Holloway.
Josh Holloway, let's say Lost.
No, it's Intelligence. That was one of the top action adventure shows.
And somehow he was third bill in that terrible
yes.
show that he was.
Lost
was
is
he?
Correct.
He was like a human who had like just.
He had downloaded it
was
knowledge
like the
$2
million dollar
really,
man, basically.
Yes, basically. Yeah.
All right.
Who do you think that they put first and second?
See, here's where I embarrass myself and I can't remember the guy's name. Can I just say Mr. Fox? And,
no.
Mr.
Trimmel?
Who would be... I'm going to try to remember what his actual name is as I circle back. And then who else?
You've already lost it. Well, you said Mr. Fox is not an answer.
Well, I know, but I was going to go back and remember his...
Oh, okay.
And then, who was on that show? Who was on that show? Well, I don't know.
Naveen Andrews was the other person.
Okay, never would
have. And Matthew Fox.
Wow. Matthew Fox, yeah.
Okay.
It's exactly what I would have said.
I know.
I would not have guessed Naveen Andrews.
Alex Crosses is
yeah,
Matthew
I thought it was
Fox.
A woman on that show that would have been second bill.
No. Woman, come on, you guys.
No, that actually the annoying girl.
Yeah, she is annoying. Omar, Michael Sinterniklaus.
Michael what?
Sinterniklaus.
That's what they call Santa Claus in Albania.
The Belgian Santa Claus. I'm gonna need the next one.
James Urbaniak.
Oh.
Oh, Oh, I say go for it, Omar. Come on, you.
Is it Venture Brothers?
Yes, it is.
Who All was right. that first guy?
Michael Sinter Niklas Dean.
Oh, okay.
Oh.
Jeff. Felix Silla.
Felix Silla?
Yep, Silla.
Okay, Chiquita, please.
Aaron Gray.
Oh, then that would have to be Buck Rogers in the 25th century.
Correct. With Gil Gerard. You're correct.
Nice.
David T. Cole.
Yep.
Michael Bell.
Rings nothing. Second, please. Chiquita.
I just want to say this is the first repeat person from the list.
Ooh.
Chris Latta.
Oh, fuck.
Do you remember what he was in before? Because no. You got this question.
Have we learned nothing before. About Chris Latta?
Oh,
this is our last question before Mr. this Latta. The last score break.
Is this the last? My last question?
No, you have one more. Everyone has one more after this. See.
Chris Latta. Who's the first guy?
Michael Bell.
Michael Bell. Who's Michael Bell? Indeed, we ask. I don't know. Decade?
The 80s.
Michael Riptide.
G.I. Joe.
The reason cartoons throw me.
Cartoon, because he was also in
I didn't remember
Transformers. Yeah, come on, Dave. It's not my fault that you have a bad memory. All right.
All right, everybody. Here we are. Everybody's got one question left, correct? Omar has 14 points. Jeff Alexander has 28 points.
Wow.
Mr. David T. Cole has 26 points.
What?
Wow.
2-point spread. So Jeff can clinch it with a good answer.
You guys could all just really hope that Picky isn't fucking you over.
Oh, that means somebody's getting fucked
no,
over.
No, I don't know.
Okay.
I don't know what you guys know.
All right.
All right, Omar.
Yeah.
Ernest Borgnine.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Are you just being a dick or do you know it?
No, he doesn't know. Oh, do I know it?
Yeah,
I know.
Do you know it?
Oh,
yes.
Jeff knows it.
I don't need that, please.
Alex Cord.
The Cord. It's not Rip Cord.
Not Alex McCord from The Real Housewives of New York City. Alex Cord.
Heart to Heart?
Nope, that's a good guess. Dave?
It's not Blue Thunder. It's the other one. It's Airwolf.
Correct.
Airwolf?
Oh, yeah.
Airwolf.
Airwolf. Yep. Jeff Alexander.
All right, Jeff. Airwolf. Don't screw it up.
Your third banana is Roger E. Mosley.
Ah! God damn it! Not fair!
It's randomized!
Hanging Chad!
It's randomized!
Boo. It's your machine, Dave.
I deserve that one.
Picky did screw Dave up. Yeah, that would be Magnum P.I. with Tom Selleck and John Hillerman.
Correct!
Wow, nice.
All right, Dave.
All right.
I don't know why we're even bothering,
no,
frankly,
me either.
But... Your third banana is Larry Wilcox.
Larry Wilcox chips.
Correct. Can you
Eric
name
Eric Estrada?
Yes.
And Frank Weller's friend from the Transformers, Latta.
Chris Latta.
No, the second build person is Robert Pine,
Never
who I think is Chris
that.
Pine's father.
But I'm happy with
it's
the
true.
Way I ended.
All right, let's have the final scores.
All right.
Oh, unless, wait, do we want to have the shits and giggles?
Let's hear the shits and giggles.
All right, your tiebreaker person is, first one to shout it out gets it, a Dave point, Mitch Pileggi.
X-Files.
The X-Files.
Dave is correct. All right, final scores.
All right, let's hear some music.
Oh, where's the final scores?
Doesn't matter, just any one of
okay.
those. All right, here we go. Omar ends the game with 14 points.
Very Yay. Respectable.
Dave T. Cole, that's me, in second place with 29 points.
Much and better showing than I thought you'd have, frankly.
Today's champion with 32 points, Mr. Jeff Alexander.
Woo!
Yay. Thank you very much.
Congrats.
Press comma.
Valued guess.
Now you can all feel like you shared it because it would have been the same triumph no matter who won.
I still feel
Here
valued.
Is Dave.
We have to say goodbye to this episode. It has been another great episode of Extra Hot Great, says a guy involved in the episode. We discuss the juicy Chess Club Brain supersized season finale of The Walking Dead, and Liv chimed in with her latest face-off report before we went around the dial with stops at Going Clear, The Daily Show, Orphan Black, Scandal, and The Good Wife. Dave, that's me, successfully pitched Magnum PI's Paper War for the Extra Hot Great Canon. We crowned the winners and losers of the week. And Jeff Alexander was the winner of this week's non-regulation, but still important, Game Time. Remember,
we're listening.
I am David Teagle, and on behalf of Tara Ariano,
come at me,
Omar Gallega,
Carl,
and Jeff Alexander.
Hello.
Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time right here on Extra Hot Great.
At the meeting, you say you were worried about someone being abused and no one was doing anything about it. You say you took a gun just to be sure that Jesse was safe from a man who wound up attacking you. You say you'll do whatever you want them to, just tell them a story that they want to hear. That's what I've been doing since I got here.
Why?
Because these people are children and children like stories.
What's the point of this story?
I like stories.